T-minus 20. Ford McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado.
What do you mean her mind is too strong? Dan asked, seeking clarity and speaking aloud more out of instinct than any conscious intent to let the others know what Leisha had said. Upon hearing it, though, their faces reflected as much shock and concern as Dan's. Leisha's reply came in a less lucid manner than normal, the words coming in fits and starts, as if he himself was trying to formulate a sensible answer even as he gave one. What Dan heard was something along the lines of, "Too much information," and, "I could not understand any of it."
"Maybe it was just gibberish," Dan said. "She is a baby."
Around him, several of the others nodded in an effort to moderate their own confusion by buying into this plausible explanation as to why Leisha had reacted in the highly atypical way he had. Overwhelmed was probably the most accurate word Dan could think of for the vibe Leisha gave off, as this was more general than the likes of scared or worried, which may well have been true but weren't yet confirmed. But even a few minutes after the initial incident, there was no doubt Leisha was still overwhelmed. It took no interpreter from New Kerguelen or experienced interspecies communicator from Earth to see that. A sudden burst of Terra's voice rose clearly above the general thoughts in Dan's mind.
"Ask if he was freaked out by what she was saying, if she even said anything, or just because it seemed like she had the power. Maybe the shock was just feeling it, knowing that she really does. You know, like how seeing it in the video of the photo frame smashing and the glass flying towards them is way more real than just hearing about it. And Leisha actually felt it, too, so maybe she didn't send any freaky thoughts. Maybe he's just freaked out that, you know, she can send any."
More nods greeted this suggestion, with the likes of Timo and Billy, rarely known as men of few words, almost as overwhelmed by the whole situation as Leisha had been at the height of his fear-like reaction. Dan passed the question to Leisha, who very quickly gave a labored nod of his own. The alien even took a moment to glance around at the others while he continued to make the gesture, as though keen to ease their minds, too, now that he knew this was their primary current concern.
"I did not hear anything specific," Leisha replied,
his syntax and speed of pseudo-verbal communication now returning to normal as the initial shock seemed to be wearing off.
"But her mind is powerful like ours, like we interpreters. The uplift powers are not passed between generations. They are granted to those who qualify for the positions which merit them. Interpreters gain telepathy, telekinesis, and what you would think of as short-distance teleportation. Qualified members of our squadron caste are also granted telekinesis and teleportation, as you know, because they are also capable of venturing off New Kerguelen, and some of their highest-ranking members are granted limited telepathy. But offspring of individuals who have been uplifted do not inherit the powers. Never in our history has anything like this been seen."
Dan took a few seconds to mentally work his way through this complex reply. Teleportation, which was a good if slightly inexact term for the flash-based appearances and disappearances of the messengers, was a power he had never considered in the same context as the two uplift powers generally discussed on Earth.
"I never had a teleportation power, though," he said, "right? So Piper isn't going to disappear herself away somewhere one day, right?"
"You did not," Leisha replied. "The uplifter we used on you and on Terra was only capable of uplifting the core powers."
"Telekinesis and telepathy?" Dan asked, almost sure this was what Leisha meant, but keen to be absolutely so.
"Yes."
Dan turned to Emma.
"I never had the teleportation power some of them have, so there's no way she could have it."
"Well, I would have said there was no way she could have any of the powers," Leisha qualified.
"But if I didn't have teleportation," Dan shrugged.
He didn't feel too concerned about the teleportation question now that Leisha had confirmed he had never been granted it, and he felt that Leisha was being overly cautious in not ruling it out altogether. For Dan, the things to worry about were the powers Piper definitely did have, the telekinesis, which had been known for almost a week, and the telepathy, however limited or otherwise, which had just been confirmed by Leisha's frightened reaction.
"Anyway, can you help us get rid of the core powers? Do you have something that will work, and not the painful device you used on us?"
Dan's body shivered involuntarily as he recalled the sharpness of the pain in his fingers and neck when the messengers showed up a year earlier and granted him the core uplift powers to enable him to deal with complex problems on Earth, while their own society was spiraling into turmoil after the death of their elders. It had been the most total pain of his life, dwarfing the intense but relatively localized agony he experienced minutes earlier when the communications cable's needle shot into an already bloodied insertion hole at the back of his neck. As much as he hated the thought even crossing his mind for a moment, he couldn't shake the assumption that little Piper's nervous system would be truly overwhelmed by the procedure, to the extent that survival seemed unlikely. And as desperate as he and Emma were to cure their daughter of the ungodly affliction that had somehow befallen her, none of the terrible consequences of her powers being publicly discovered would ever merit an intervention that carried such risks.
"The uplifter is far too powerful for one so young," Leisha said. "I could not sanction it."
"The device won't work," Dan sighed, repeating it for the benefit of the others. Tara, recalling the full-on nervous system assault that accompanied the procedure, was least surprised of all to hear this.
"Do they have anything else?"
she asked. Dan passed this question to Leisha, adding one of his own to inquire whether the mention of a limited uplifter should raise any hope in his mind of potential access to such a thing.
"We have uplifters for chosen members of our own caste, which are different from those used on newly qualified interpreters," Leisha said. "Different of necessity, since they enabled our ability to interpret the will of our elders as well as granting teleportation and the core powers."
"You mean you have a few of the same kind of device that does all of that? Or you have various different kinds of uplifters? Different uplift devices, different methods, maybe even one that doesn't pierce the skin or cause crazy amounts of pain?"
"Various devices, and yes, some are head-mounted and wave-based rather than physically invasive."
For the first time in the whole conversation, Dan's eyebrows rose in hope. He turned to Emma, instinctively needing to share it first with her. "There are all different uplifter devices. They don't all hurt." Leisha, however, spoke up to urge caution.
"Dan, I have no specific device in mind as a likely candidate to remove these powers. We have no basis to confidently believe that any powers not granted by one of our devices can be removed by one of our devices."
"Are the devices something you know a lot about? And I don't mean you, just some of your kind in general. Or is that another thing you don't know much about since the elders stopped working?"
"We have a specialist with a working understanding of such things," Leisha replied, the words somehow entering Dan's mind in a way that made them feel cold. "Not me, and I would not even know the right questions to ask. You, on the other hand."
In hindsight, the apparent coldness of the words made Dan consider that it may have been insensitive to speak of the elders having stopped working, given that the messengers had apparently viewed them as akin to living things, and not even merely as their own equals, but as intellectual and perhaps ethical superiors.
"Do not worry about that," Leisha replied, reminding Dan one more time that everything he thought while the cable was connected made its way to Leisha,
and not only the things he consciously sought to communicate.
"I just thought of something," Dan exclaimed. Leisha, when you take us to New York to talk to Godfrey and Ding about everything, can you make it so they can't hear our thoughts? I don't want them knowing about Piper, and I can just speak out loud to them."
"Good thinking," Billy Kendrick chimed in. The scene remained surreal, with Billy still standing next to Timo, the silent Phil and Mr. Bird still together, and Emma holding Piper while Clark and Tara stood closest to Dan. Henry, in his wheelchair, wore the most tired and uncertain expression of anyone. Until Billy spoke, Dan had barely been aware of his continued presence, or indeed that of anyone besides his closest inner circle who had known about the powers for as long as he had.
"I can do that," Leisha confirmed, very matter-of-factly and almost as though Dan has asked him to pass the ketchup rather than tinker with the specifics of who heard what when connected to a remarkable translation device.
Thinking now of that device's evident complexity and Leisha's assurance that at least some messengers had a working understanding of its functionality, Dan felt his hope returning.
And you won't tell them either, will you? He asked, belatedly thinking it worth sharing this. Actually, can you do that? Because you can't speak to them out loud like I can, so you need to have a two-way link. Can you control what you think, so they don't hear anything you don't want them to? You and Sacco kind of did that before, didn't you? Think too fast for us to keep up? For the first time in a while, Leisha forced a smile and accompanied it with his typically exaggerated but ever-endearing wink. On this occasion, he also shook his head, very slowly and far further in each direction than any human would.
My expressed thoughts are within my control, Dan, he said, leaving it at that.
It suddenly struck Dan as ironic that at most of the same times when Leisha seemed most human, primarily when he was expressing himself with gestures he had picked up through observation, he looked most alien. The thoughts in Dan's mind as he considered this weren't unlike those present when he'd seen Leisha and Sacco for the first time in Lolo National Forest with Emma at his side, when their alien faces completely confounded his eyes and brain as every neural pathway within him struggled to interpret what he was looking at. He had since read all about pattern recognition in humans and how slight deviations in facial structure were often responsible for cross-cultural preferences, and the opposite, in ways that were somewhat evolutionarily instinctive rather than dismissible as norms or anything similar. Feelings as strong as disgust had been clinically observed when digital representations of human faces were highly manipulated, for instance, with the addition of a third eye or the alteration of a nose to look more like a flat snout. This wasn't necessarily the most universally acclaimed research, but in relating it to the messengers, Dan saw a worthwhile perspective. Their faces just weren't right, with slight differences in the ratios between features, one of the most obvious factors, and the total lack of eyebrows despite the apparent presence of a slight ridge another, which had naturally caused him to double-take during that first meeting. But the messenger's warm eyes and the somehow neotenous overall appearance of their faces prevented the disgust response from rearing its head. Dan didn't quite see the cuteness some people spoke of, and certainly wouldn't anytime soon be buying Piper one of the teddy bear-like stuffed messenger toys that had dominated the last Christmas season, but they weren't truly ugly. If they had been, none of these thoughts would ever have occurred, because Dan's mind's drive to compare and contrast would have been forever numbed by the enormous differences between his species and theirs, rather than fixating on the relatively small differences, which were heightened by the number of broader similarities. In height, weight, and so many other things, the differences were slight enough to all but disappear. On more than one occasion, Dan had wrestled with the fact that the messengers seemed too physically similar to humans to have evolved utterly independently so far away, whether in parallel to or much earlier than the ascent of man. Madness that way lies, had been Billy Kendrick's response when Dan asked if he ever considered such things, but Dort Lutepe had done little to quiet the thoughts. Back in the moment, however, the warm and seemingly intentionally humorous gestures Leisha performed and the tone he adopted brought Dan's focus to an altogether less positive motive. Leisha's overwhelmed reaction to feeling Piper's telepathic power had looked entirely instinctive, unlike these more recent friendly gestures, and also unlike the admittedly frightening look of rage that had crossed his face while he eliminated the would-be assassin in Buenos Aires. Dan wondered now if that had also been exaggerated in this manner. Leisha felt emotions, that much was abundantly clear, but the way he physically expressed them to humans was occasionally pantomime-like in its overtness. When it came to winks, smiles, and exaggerated shakes of his head, this was often amusing. But Dan now realized that when the world was watching and Leisha had wanted to make his anger clear, he'd done so in a way that came across far more strongly and scarily than he probably realized. One day we'll study them and no more, Dan thought. One day.
One day,
Leisha replied, bringing a smile to Dan's face with yet another reminder that he heard everything.
And yes, Dan, I misjudged my expression when I eliminated the threat. I misjudged much that day. I am sorry for any problems it caused.
What's he saying? Tara asked.
Dan hadn't clocked out, and in truth, only around 10 seconds had passed in the time his mind had been running through its recurring thoughts about Leisha's appearance and mannerisms, but he understood that even 10 seconds out of the loop at a time like this must have been hard for the others to deal with. "There's not going to be any problem keeping the news from Godfrey and Ding," he replied. "And he said some of them know how to work all the different uplifters. He doesn't, and they probably wouldn't talk to him about it, but they should talk to me, and they might have something that will do it. Emma, they might really be able to help us with this today." Emma smiled as Dan looked at her. So much was happening that the initial news of the messengers being angry with the human crew had all but faded from her mind, but only because Leisha so clearly and so absolutely trusted Dan. And with Leisha and Sacco calling the shots in their elder's absence, that counted for a lot.
"And you are able to help us just as much," Leisha reminded Dan. "Our discovery is the most destabilizing moment on New Caer Galen since our elders stopped responding to our input, and you alone can bring calm with your presence."
"Anything," Dan said. "To fix Piper. To save Piper. I'll do anything." Leisha looked at Dan for several seconds without responding, until he stepped forward in preparation to remove the cable from his neck.
"This will hurt, Dan, but we must leave immediately.